The West Live. The West Live. With Jenna Clark.
The absolutely heartbreaking news that Jamie Kenny secretly battled with an eating disorder before her death this week. It's absolutely heartbreaking for Lisa Curry and her husband, her ex-husband. Joining me now from the UWA School of Psychological Science is Dr. Jason Bell. Dr. Bell, thank you so much for your time. The death of Jamie Kenny has really shocked people, I guess, all over the country. But am I correct in thinking that eating disorders are still a widespread condition?
Morning, Jenna. Yeah, look, I think that's one of the issues is always around public information. And one of the things that potentially people don't realise is the scale of the problem. I mean, even back in 2012, a report by the Butterfly Foundation told us that there were 1 million people in Australia living with an eating disorder at any given time. Mortality rates for some of these eating disorders are among the highest of any psychiatric illness that you can have. And, of course, the treatment outcomes don't have 100% effectiveness at the moment. So, this is a problem that people really need to understand the scale and the frequency of.
Absolutely. And does your research show that younger people are now presenting with eating disorders much younger than we I mean, I think you typically think it's young women moving into their, you know, puberty and things like that. But are kids suffering from this at a younger age?
We are seeing some of that, yeah. I think 17 to 24 is still the sort of standard age bracket that we really associate with being a high-risk period. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right, Jenna. We're now starting to see, of course, some of these sort of puberty is occurring earlier in some classes of society, yeah. And that's meaning that some of the body image issues are representing themselves at an earlier age.
Insanity. So how young would some of these people be?
Well, I think you're now seeing some diagnoses occurring for 12 and 13-year-olds, which I think is telling us that those sort of and you know, social media and these inspiration blogs and things like that, that these are leading people towards a path potentially of that maladaptive thinking that really does ramp up the symptomatology.
In terms of the split with people that do suffer these horrific conditions, male and female, is there an even split now between young men and young women suffering with anorexia and eating disorders?
It's a really good question, Jenna. I think one of the sort of traditional myths around this has been that this is a female-only illness. And I think what we're now seeing is that the prevalence is increasing amongst males, as you say. And we're looking at there being around 25% at the moment of those diagnosed with an eating disorder now are males. And that number is on the rise, as is the overall prevalence as well, of course.
Wow. And I guess just for some of the markers that people should be looking out for if they're a bit worried about loved ones or friends, does it sort of start with disordered eating, or is there any sort of markers that should be setting off alarm bells when you think that people may be struggling with an eating disorder?
I think that's a good question. Of course, this is a multifaceted problem, and so it's not that there's one recipe to get towards that troubled state. You're absolutely right. Disordered eating is a feature of several different types, such as anorexia nervosa, which is the most commonly known eating disorder, of course, and also binge eating disorder, which is that sort of overeating and then purging through laxatives or vomiting. So disordered eating is certainly one of the things, but it's also that over-evaluation of body shape and weight, that sort of starting to define yourself by your figure and how you feel you relate to the sort of general thinness values that we have in our society is also a really prevalent. And just that sort of disorganized thinking in terms of having the emphasis on defining yourself in those ways related to your physical appearance.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of advancements in treatment, we touched on it earlier, the fact that, like you said, it's not a one-size-fits-all and a lot of work still has to be done in this realm. What are the new advances that we're seeing in the space?
Yeah, look, I think, I mean, I should be clear, I'm not a clinical psychologist. My research is mainly in understanding the problem areas so that we can start to move forward with them. But I think we are seeing a diverse range of treatments on offer now. I mean, there's things done around raising core body temperature. There are things done around incentivizing eating. And then, of course, there are traditional cognitive behavioral therapies that you see that are really prevalent within the psychology industry. So there are a different range of things. I guess the most important thing is that people are aware when they start to have those faulty patterns of thinking or start to evaluate themselves or eat in disordered fashions, and that those family members and close friends and contacts, you know, become that first source of assistance for the person to be able to talk with them about things when there is some concern there.
It's so true, because that idea of talking and making sure that people, you're surrounded by good people. I feel that there is so much focus now on awareness for illnesses such as mental health and breast cancer and prostate cancer, yes, and things like this. Why don't we talk about eating disorders as much as we potentially should, given the rate of, you know, young people presenting as young as 12 and 13?
Look, I think the answer to that is a complex one, Jenna, but I think in one sense it's that there is still that stigma around mental illness. So that means while we might talk about issues related to COVID on the day or colds and flus,
those
physical illnesses, we tend to be much more comfortable because we don't ascribe any weakness to getting the cold or the flu. But mental illness still has that stigma about a discussion regarding it, and that's quite a barrier to overcome.
Indeed. The recovery rate for people, as we saw the tragic news out of Queensland this week with Jamie Kenny losing her battle, what is the recovery rate for people that do suffer this from, you know, because I guess it is an ongoing situation and relapse is quite common. Is it on an upward scale, or is it declining?
I have to be honest, I don't have that number at hand, but I would say I think your point is absolutely right, that recovery depends how you want to define it, because this is a lifelong condition that many people will have relapses on. But one of the other things, of course, is that people who have a mental illness don't tend to have just one.
Yeah.
They tend to have comorbidities, and with eating disorders, we see a lot of anxiety, we see a lot of depression, and there's actually quite a strong correlation between eating disorders and autism, as it turns out. So there tend to be these other intervening factors that mean that the treatment programs can be quite complex, of course, because you need to tackle more than one thing.
Of course.
But I think we are making progress. There's no doubt about that. But of course, you're seeing the rates rising as well. And so the scale of the problem we're trying to treat is also increasing.
Yeah, indeed. That's an interesting point about autism. Is it because I know loved ones who have suffered this horrific illness, and it is all about control, right? And that is one of the factors and the markers of autism. So in terms of if someone was suffering that badly, would it be, you know, presenting at an ED? Like, what do you do with someone that is struggling that badly?
Well, I think the first thing is understanding the symptoms in order to know what you're treating. But in terms of the autism, what we're seeing is some of the hardwiring within the brain shows some commonalities across those two groups. A real focus on detail instead of being able to integrate the whole information. And that represents itself in eating disorders as individuals who can stare at the mirror and they can find anywhere that fat might still be hiding, even though they might be overall quite emaciated. So it's that detail-focused thinking, it's that rigid thinking where they sort of have an attitude about themselves and about the way society and the world operates, and it's very hard to change that line of thinking, and those are some of the commonalities we see with autism. But there's a range of different symptoms and the way that they present, and recognising those both within oneself and the friends and family around is an important part.
For sure. For so many years, we feel that we're judging and sort of blaming external factors. I mean, I remember growing up, it was always, you know, women's magazines telling you that there's only one way to be beautiful, and that is to be thin and white. And now we have, you know, then we had MTV, which was hyper-sexualized versions of women. And then now we're having things like social media where you know, see wives and girlfriends of footballers posing in bikinis every second day. How do we guard ourselves against these images? Because I guess they do have, when we are bombarded with it, I mean, I'm someone in my 30s and it still has an impact. I can imagine what it's like on a young person who's still quite impressionable. How do we guard against these external factors?
Well, I think that's a great point, Jenna, and that is one of the lines that my research has been tackling. It's really about that. One of the things that you tend to find, of course, is that people become drawn to information that fits with their view of the world or that fits with their maladaptive thinking of the world, and that creates these vicious cycles where what you look at is what you think about, and what you think about is what you look at. And so in the context of eating disorders, you're exactly right. It is those magazine front covers. It is those Beachbody ready billboards that you see that people who are high in eating disorder symptoms or with a diagnosis, they are drawn automatically and without even consciously being aware of it. They're drawn to that sort of information. Yeah. But of course, for them, it's maladaptive information because it just cements that way of thinking about how they should be and what they're not. They're always performing this comparison between themselves and the information that they see. And of course, a lot of times these are unattainable goals. They're photoshopped and all these sorts of things. So you've got people thinking about the wrong thing and thinking about things that are just not attainable and just not healthy for them.
Well, you're doing some amazing work in this space. Dr. Jason Bell from UWA's School of Psychological Science, thank you so very much for your time. I look forward to chatting to you again.
Thank you, Jenna.